It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Why do you think corporations and middle-class people and affluent people pay attorney's fees in excess of $200 an hour to hire an attorney? It's because they understand it's a necessity to understand the law and to be able to navigate our legal system. They don't do it because they enjoy the attorney's company, that the attorney is a warm and fuzzy, nice guy that deserves the retainer. They do it because it's a fact of life necessity, that if you want access to our judicial system, if you want to have your day in court heard fairly, you basically have to hire an attorney. It's the price of admission to our judicial system.
John Whitfield, Executive Director of Blue Ridge Legal Services in Harrisonburg, Virginia, answers the fundamental question, why legal aid? As the Legal Services Corporation marks its 35th anniversary as an independent agency providing federal funding for legal aid societies. And the recent troubled history of the minimum wage is explored during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 49, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. A recent research brief from the Center for Responsible Lending reveals that the top 8 credit card issuers, representing 80% of credit card balances, are raising interest rates and increasing fees. Their regulator, the Federal Reserve Board, issued new rules with improved consumer protections in December 2008, but they don't take effect until July 2010. Rather than get a head start on better and fairer practices, these 8 credit card issuers are conducting business as usual. In the last 6 months, all continue to hike interest rates on existing balances on an anytime, any reason basis. The Center for Responsible Lending estimates at least 10 million account holders received rate hikes. 5 of the top 8 increased transaction fees, late fees, or fees for account maintenance. And at least one top credit card issuer broadened the definition of several other fees, over the limit, return payment, and convenience check fees, so more customers are required to pay them. In other news, under the Making Home Affordable plan launched in March, mortgage companies have made more than 55,000 offers to modify borrowers' loans. But many homeowners who are unemployed or owe much more than their homes are worth don't qualify and still face foreclosure. Last month, the Obama administration expanded its $50 billion mortgage aid program by announcing new policies to help homeowners with foreclosure alternatives if they can't get other assistance. The new measures streamline the process of transferring ownership of a home to the lender or selling a home that's worth less than the mortgage. The new initiatives are aimed at ineligible homeowners who usually have 2 alternatives to foreclosure: signing the title to the lender in a deed in lieu of foreclosure, or, with the lender's permission, selling for less than the value of the loan in a short sale. The plan offers mortgage companies up to $1,000 and borrowers up to $1,500 in relocation costs. To learn more, contact Housing Opportunities Made Equal at 804-354-0641 or at www.phonehome.org. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is docketing the judgment. A creditor who has a judgment against you records the judgment in any circuit court in Virginia, and that is docketing the judgment. This puts a lien or a claim on any real property you own in that county or city. This doesn't mean your house or land will be sold, but it does mean you can't sell it or give it away and turn over a clear property title without paying the judgment. Very few judgments are collected by forcing a sale of your house. Usually the judgment gets paid when you choose to sell the house. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and docketing the judgment is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for this week's question and answer. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Deborah, Henrico County, Virginia.
Welcome to the show, Deborah. What question do you have for us?
About minimum wages. I would like to know, how do the government or anyone expect us to live? Take a woman with two children and herself to live off a minimum wage, pay for an apartment as well as buy food and pay for health insurance.
Well, Deborah, that's an excellent question, and it goes a bit beyond legal issues. It goes into some public policy issues as well, but let's go to the legal issues and then go beyond that to the policy issues. I mean, right now, as of July 24, 2008, the minimum wage is, as you know, $6.55 per hour. It will increase on July 24, 2009 to $7.25 per hour. And after that, there are no scheduled increases. The Congress may or may not take that up sometime this year or next and add increases in 2010, 2011, 2012. As you probably know, the minimum wage wasn't increased for about 10 years until it got an increase in 2007 and then an increase to 2008 and an increase in 2009. How does the government expect anyone to live on the minimum wage of $6.55 an hour or even $7.25 an hour? To be quite honest, frankly, they don't. And that's why there are government programs that try to help people with certain things that they can't pay for if they're earning just the minimum wage. The problem is that even those government programs really don't reach everyone who is in need. Just to give you an example, in Virginia, you would think that everybody who was eligible for food stamps would get food stamps. In fact, only 69% of people who are eligible for food stamps actually get them. And that's high compared to a lot of the other social safety net programs. For insurance for children, only 71% of poor children who are eligible actually get it. For adults, only 34% of the eligible adults get health insurance provided by the government in Virginia. In terms of housing assistance, it goes to only 31% of the eligible households. In terms of unemployment compensation, it's a mere 29%. So those safety net programs really don't work very well. Arguably, anybody who's low income ought to be eligible for health insurance, food stamps, housing assistance. But in fact, as you can see, other than children's health insurance and food stamps, most people who are eligible, in fact, don't get that assistance. And in fact, you know, for unemployment compensation and for government health insurance for adults, Virginia ranks in among the bottom 10 states for both of those types of assistance. Thank you very much for being on the show. It was a very interesting conversation.
Thank you.
We're here at the Charlottesville office of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, and we're speaking with John Whitfield, who is the executive director of Blue Ridge Legal Services in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks.
This is the 35th year of the Federal Legal Services Corporation's existence, and it seems like an appropriate time to talk about the basic question that legal aid always faces day to day, which is, why legal aid? So, John, tell our listeners, why legal aid?
Lawyers hold the keys to the courthouse. You might have the law on your side. You might be absolutely right, but you don't know what to say, where to say it, what to file, where to go, what to do, because you're not a lawyer. And for many people, that means they're locked out of the court system if they can't afford to pay for the services of an attorney.
Well, now, aren't our courts set up in a manner that allows people to represent themselves? That's certainly true in the general district court, in the juvenile and domestic relations court, and in a lot of agency proceedings like the Social Security Administration, the Virginia Employment Commission, the Department of Social Services. Why can't people just go in and represent themselves?
Why do you think corporations and middle-class people and affluent people pay attorney's fees in excess of $200 an hour to hire an attorney to help them if they have a legal question, much less a legal dispute? It's because they understand it's a necessity to understand the law and to be able to navigate our legal system. They don't do it because they enjoy the attorney's company, that the attorney is a warm and fuzzy nice guy that deserves the retainer. They do it because it's a fact of life necessity that if you want access to our judicial system, if you want to have your day in court heard fairly, you basically have to hire an attorney. It's the price of admission to our judicial system.
Well, now, in certain cases, of course, you're entitled to a court-appointed lawyer. Why are you not entitled to a court-appointed lawyer in the cases that legal aid handles?
You know, that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions that I run into when I've talked to people about legal aid. Everyone's seen countless cop shows over the years. At the time that someone's arrested, they've certainly heard their Miranda rights. If you can't afford an attorney, one will be appointed to represent you. So people think, why in the world do you need a separate nonprofit organization like legal aid, and why should they deserve the support of the public when I know from the cop shows I've seen that people get appointed a lawyer like a public defender, a court-appointed lawyer, if they can't afford one. Well, the big distinction is on those cop shows, those people who've been arrested have been accused of a crime, and they're facing incarceration. And the Supreme Court has held that the Constitution requires that the state provide people with an attorney if they can't afford an attorney if they're facing incarceration. But for all those low-income people who haven't done anything wrong, haven't broken any criminal law, who just have a legal problem like anyone else, a civil legal problem, there's no such thing as a court-appointed lawyer. There's no public defender. And if there was no legal aid, there would be no place for these people to turn.
Well, now, don't judges deal with unrepresented people all the time simply because there isn't the right to a court-appointed lawyer in a civil case? And doesn't the judge try to assist unrepresented people, especially if the other side has an attorney?
It's an impossible job. The judge has to be impartial. And the judge in our system of at the adversarial system depends on both sides being represented by counsel who have researched the law, prepared the facts, and present the case both in their most zealous fashion. So when you have one side who is represented and who has the advantage of having someone research the law, prepared the facts, presented the facts, understanding all the rules of evidence, and the other side is not, the judge is in an impossible situation. And just think about if that happens not just in one case, but it happens over decades, over a century or more, of one side institutionally always having an attorney, and the other side, more often than not, not having an attorney, in situations where there's powerful versus the powerless. Most common situations would be a business versus a consumer, a landlord versus a tenant, a bank versus someone who's being foreclosed upon. Situations where one side has resources and can generally always afford an attorney, and the other side probably not. In those situations, over decades, the law gets stunted and like a tree that grows in the direction of sunlight over the years. The same way happens to the law, so that the law has been distorted in favor of people of means and has been stunted against people who are poor.
So could you tell us briefly the history of legal aid? I know I mentioned at the introduction that 35 years ago was the first independent federal agency, the Federal Legal Services Corporation, that first began to fund legal aid programs. And by the end of the 1970s, there was a legal aid program at least nominally serving every city, every county in the country. But surely the history of legal aid goes back farther than that.
Well, you can go back to the very first recorded legal code in civilization for the very initial premise of legal aid. The Code of Hammurabi, which was 1700 BC, that's 3,700 years ago. It's the first known code of law written down by Hammurabi, who's the king of Babylonia. That code states that the primary purpose of law is to protect the powerless from the powerful. So right there, the very first seed of the need for legal aid was planted 3,700 years ago. Even if you move up to the Old Testament and the book of Proverbs, there's a wonderful verse that says, "Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy." That goes back to the Old Testament, which is the sort of basis for our Judeo-Christian heritage for much of Western civilization. And so, from the very beginning of our civilization, of our culture, there's been a recognition that the poor and the needy need representation against the powerful. If you move up on into a more modern days in America, Frederick Douglass, who was a powerful advocate and famous for his abolitionist activities in fighting slavery in America, he said, "Where justice is denied, where poverty is enforced, where ignorance prevails, where any one class is made to feel that society is an organized conspiracy to oppress, rob, and degrade them, neither persons nor property will be safe." That argues sort of the self-interest of our society to make sure that all of America, rich or poor, feel like they do have the equal protection of the law, and that the courts are just as much for them as for someone else, that they have equal access to our system of justice.
So now that we do have legal aid, how equal is the access to justice? In other words, how many legal aid lawyers are there for the number of poor people compared to, I guess, non-legal aid lawyers to non-poor people? Or how does that compare across countries, across cultures? How well or poorly are we meeting the need?
Well, to set the stage for that, I've got one more quote that was maybe my favorite. And this is from a former California Court of Appeals Justice Earl Johnson. And he said that poor people have access to the American courts today in the same sense that the Christians had access to the lions when they were dragged into a Roman arena. Yeah, so the facts show that while there are 304 Virginians for every lawyer in Virginia, there's almost 6,000 low-income persons for every legal aid lawyer in Virginia. The odds are stacked against poor people and their lawyers by something like 20 times. And another interesting fact, England spends 11 times as much per capita on civil legal services as America does, if you count all the government sources of funding. Even the Netherlands spends 4 times as much. And Germany and France spend twice as much as the United States. So you can see that there's a huge unmet need that even though the best efforts of legal aid and pro bono attorneys, it's still just dwarfed by the chasm of unmet need. That's probably 8 to 11 times what we can do.
Well, you just mentioned pro bono, and I know one of the arguments that I used to hear a long time ago was that there really was no need for legal aid because the private bar would take care of the needy. The private bar knew who was deserving, who wasn't, who was poor, who wasn't, and especially in the rural areas, but also to some extent in the cities, private attorneys would just say, we'll take care of the situation. There's no need for legal aid funding. How would you respond to that point?
In Harrisonburg, where I've practiced for the last 25 years, I guess, we have one of the strongest pro bono programs in the country. They've received national recognition from the ABA for their pro bono program. And they do as well as any bar, I suggest. And even with their help, and they might handle a couple hundred cases a year in a good year, there is still a huge unmet need. And so if one of the best bars in the country can't help fill the gap, it's not realistic to expect this to happen on a national level.
Tell us, what difference does a legal aid lawyer make for a client in a typical case? I mean, you can only rise so far above your facts. So how much difference does having legal representation make, in your estimation, in these cases?
The presence of a lawyer is essential for most people in order to get justice. Our judges aren't expected to know every law. It's impossible. They depend on well-educated, well-versed, well-researched advocates representing both sides so that they are then presented with a balanced view of the law. Without someone helping you with the process, helping you with the law, helping the judge understand the law, particularly when you're going up against an adversary who is represented, your chances of winning are virtually nil. So it really does make the difference between justice or not. Probably the most universally shared set of principles in America is contained in the Pledge of Allegiance. School children have it memorized. Every adult knows it. At every public function, you'll hear it. And when people say that Pledge of Allegiance, I suspect they mean every last word of it. And the very last words of it are justice for all. And that sums up, I think, one of the things that makes America special, that we believe in justice for all, equal justice, whether you're rich or poor, black or white, white collar, blue collar, no collar, that all are equal under the law. That's only going to happen, though, if all have true equal access to justice. And that means if you can't afford an attorney, there's legal aid there to provide one for you.
Thank you, John. We have been speaking with John Whitfield, the executive director of the Blue Ridge Legal Services in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And we have been talking about the answer to the question, why legal aid? Thank you so much, John.
My pleasure.
This week's top three tips are about debtors' interrogatories. The first tip is that debtor interrogatories can be issued by a court
only after a judgment has been granted against you. The second tip is that debtor interrogatories require that you come to a hearing at a certain date, time, and place to allow the creditor who has the judgment to ask you questions about your income and property. The questions and answers help the creditor try to collect the judgment. The third tip is that if you don't go to the court to answer the debtor interrogatories, you can be arrested. The arrest is because you didn't come to court, not because you didn't pay the judgment. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips about debtor interrogatory.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. If you're hurt in an accident, don't assume the insurance company is looking out for you. Join us next week when private attorney Wayne O'Brien reveals the hidden inside secrets big insurance companies don't want you to know about your personal injury claim. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegberg.